we are having a call-in show on specifically shade gardening. And joining me this morning is Martha Jacobson to tell us some of her tips to keep your shade gardens happy, I guess. Good morning, Martha.
Thanks for being here.
And as we speak about shade, I think it's good kind of to define what is shade. I mean, obviously, if you don't have direct sun, you have shade. But does that mean you never have direct sunlight in a shade garden, or there's a certain amount of sun that still qualifies as being a shade garden?
Okay, let's look at this from a whole different perspective about shade gardening. Let me start by saying that I believe that all gardening in Ketchikan is shade gardening. Even if you don't have one tree in your front yard, if you have great exposure, I still maintain that you are a shade gardener. You know, we think of shade in the traditional sense as being a canopy of trees or limbs or some kind of a blockage of the sun. But I want you to think even bigger than that. Because once you get through the canopy of tree leaves, what is the universal canopy up there in the sky that covers Ketchikan most of the time?
Clouds.
Right. So, you know, I hear a lot of gardeners whining about, oh, I wish that I could grow some species of flower that was never meant to grow here because they grow really well when they are on their holiday in New Mexico or wherever. Well, let's gardeners of Ketchikan stop complaining and let's unite under the fact that we do, all of us, have to deal with shade. Shade in the universal sense. You know, the traditional form of shade, you think of it as light shade or morning shade or midday shade or afternoon shade, you know, or so on and so forth, something like that. But think of it like you're going into Madison's and you're going to get a can of white paint and you go up to the paint guy there in Madison's and say, I like a can of white paint. Well, he'll look at you like you're crazy. Have you ever tried to see how many cans or how many shades of white paint there are? I mean, there are blue, white, yellow white, gray white, on and on and on and on. Eggshell white, glossy white. There are names of white paints that you don't even imagine that this could possibly be a white in color. Well, think of shade in that same way. No matter what you call it, no matter how you paint it, it's still white. So matter what you call it, how you paint it, it's still shade. So I think the biggest thing that Ketchikan gardeners need to do is adjust their thinking about their definition of shade. It is here. It is part of our universe if we're going to call ourselves a gardener in Ketchikan. And so just deal with it. And other than having some miraculous upscale of global warming, this is how it's going to be in Ketchikan.
With respect to those sunny days we have, though, where, you know, there'll be the stretches of very hot and sunny weather, that can negatively affect certain plants, correct? I mean, it's positive for most, I guess, but certain things that just don't love the sun.
True. But right, just by listening to your question, I can tell that you are not a convert to shade, you know, because you're talking about those hot, sunny days. Again, hot and sunny are in degrees. We don't really have hot, sunny days in the typical sense of the word. So when you shop for your plants, when you are looking for plants that you think are going to do well in your garden, I really encourage everybody to really research well. What does this, in your plant selection, what does this plant need in order to thrive? So I do a lot of research when I shop for my plants. I don't know, Maria, have you ever been out to my garden?
Long, long ago.
Okay. There are two things that kind of make my garden unique. Number one is its size. It's just under an acre. And I don't even call it a garden anymore. I call it a woodland park. But years ago when I started cleaning this forest out, the woods out of debris, I decided that as part of my own conversion to shade, that I would really research and start to only buy plants that do well in the quote-unquote shade. Very few plants are harmed by our undying sun. Really, they are. But a lot of plants are ill-suited for Ketchikan. So you really need to have good smarts about yourself as an individual gardener when it comes to plant selection.
You mentioned that you cleared out the woodland area. How did you deal with the soils, which we do not have deep soils here by any means or well-developed soils? Did you have to supplement soils, or did you just kind of plant a lot of things in the forest soil itself?
Sure. as you know, because all of us go out on hikes, as soon as you get out in the woods and you've got a canopy, the woodland floor stops producing vegetation because the sun cannot get down to the forest floor. And everyone knows in order to have plants grow, they have to have photosynthesis, which means they have to have direct light. And when they don't get that needed light, they're not going to grow. So the forest floor is usually quite bare and void of plants. Therefore, when I cleaned out my property, mostly what I did was haul rubbish to the dump, you know, yard waste, branches, stuff that, debris. Also under that pile of stuff were a couple forts boys had made earlier in the, before I bought that property, and five bicycles, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, hauled it all away, cleaned it all out so I could actually see what was there. And only then did I start looking at designing the garden. And of course I did that by, when I cleaned out the woodland park that I now call my woodland park, there were a lot of trees that I chopped down. So to get light into the forest floor, you either can cut trees down or thin branches in the canopy or thin lower leaves of the branches of the trees. Because our sun really never does get up very high in the sky. And so the angle that the sun comes, you can succeed in getting more light into your garden by cutting lower branches. So I did all those things. But I got it cleared out enough, Maria, so I could see what the design was going to look like. Where could I put flower beds? And then all my flower beds are all raised. I haul soil in around the stumps, the cut-off rounds of the logs from the trees, and just started in bit by bit by bit, slowly, slowly, slowly.
Did you have something else you wanted to add there?
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, and let's talk, I guess, about some of the plants. Mm-hmm. Which plants do you find are most successful?
You bet. There are lots of them, thank goodness. And so other than that age-old issue of soil prep and how you deal with that and the amount of water you give to your plants, those two things, we can set those aside. Let's go ahead and talk about the success of gardening, shade gardening, with regards to plant selection. I'd like to start by suggesting a few choices that would be great as ground covers. There are a variety to choose from. There are the group called Acorus, A-C-O-R-U-S. There are Astilbes. There are Ajugas, Lysimachias, Phlox, and a host of others. The group of Acorus that A-C-O-R-U-S, those are grass-like clumps that are about 6 inches tall. They slowly spread around on the ground, and the beauty of them is they prefer moist sites. They even will grow well in standing water. I have a section in my yard that is could be categorized as a swamp. Skunk cabbage love it. And I also grow primroses. The candelabra primrose loves to have its feet wet, as do blue and yellow irises. They will grow really well in wet, wet conditions. So if you have a spot in your yard like I do, which is a really large spot that likes to have moist, moist ground, a chorus is a good one for that. The evergreen foliage on them is green and gold and variegated. They're really quite lovely. In the astilbe group, the species that are well adapted to our climate are the fennal, F-A-N-A-L. That's the astilbe that has that lovely deep red flower on it. The Ehrlich and the Venus, and they are all about 3 feet tall, and they have those bushy plumes on top. They are a wonderful shade flower. And there's a dwarf spreading astilbe called the dwarf Chinese. I have those in my yard too. And they are called a ground cover. They are probably 8 to 10 inches tall. And they form such a mat that the weeds are, it's impenetrable.
Well, it's good though.
No
kidding.
To
avoid the weeds, I guess. Yeah.
They're a fabulous ground cover. And they have those pinkish purple bottle brush like plumes. And the one thing, another thing that I like astilbe about, is they bloom in July. So many of our flowers here in Ketchikan bloom in the spring. And that is caused by an evolutionary process, because in the springtime, before deciduous trees sprout out their leaves, there is less canopy because the leaves haven't come. So the flowers have adapted to that. And since there's more direct light coming down, they bloom at that season. And that's why you have so many spring flowers here in Ketchikan. So if you can find flowers that bloom later on when the canopy has spread out, when the leaves have sprouted out and the canopy is more dense and dark, astilbe is really a good one. It makes a wonderful flower in Ketchikan because they also like moisture in order to survive. Ajugas are certainly popular here in Ketchikan and have been so for many years. Folks are now opting out for the many more colorful leaf forms, including Ajugas Burgundy Glow. There's an Ajuga Pink Silver, which has pink, white, and purple foliage on it. There's Ajuga Silver Beauty, which has white and kind of a green-gray foliage. There's a Ajuga Gray Lady, which has a sort of a gray-green type of foliage. And there's a host of purple foliaged Ajugas. I have a whole patch of those in my yard. And I noticed coming down my driveway that Daniel Landis has also a big patch of those purple Ajugas. And just to show you how hardy they are, some of the drivers on our driveway are not very good drivers, mostly the oil man and the, you know, garbage man. And they drive right over them, and they just keep right on growing, you know. So that's the kind of plant I love. So Ajugas will thrive in everything except the most dense of shade. And by dense of shade, I mean going into your closet and shutting the door and turning off the light, that kind of dense shade. But Ajugas will and can die out if the soil is not good drainage. Okay, commonly grown ground cover also are the whole group called moneyworts. And that's the most popular one here in Ketchikan is a Lysimachia. And it's very rapidly spreading but easy to contain. And I like the golden leaf form of Lysimachia. And although it's got a lovely yellow shade in it, if the shade is too dense, the leaf will turn totally green. And that's understandable because it has to produce photosynthesis and chlorophyll in order to survive. So another favorite ground cover here in Ketchikan is the Mondo grasses. I am not a big fan of grasses, but there are a lot of people who are. So I mentioned those Mondo grasses just for the sake of those people who really do like them. And they are tough as nails, which is a really good thing. Another favorite of mine is the woodland phlox. In spring, they have this beautiful fragrant blue flowers. They're about a foot tall. And blue is sort of a color that's hard to find too many flowers that are blue. So this is a good one, woodland phlox. There's a couple of commonly grown greenhouse hanging basket plants that also make a wonderful shade woodland ground cover. And that's the strawberry begonia and the piggyback plant. So these are very hardy ground covers that can really tolerate dense shade. And they make a lovely mat of very interesting foliage.
You mentioned that they're generally grown in a greenhouse. So in the winter, do they die out and you need to replant them, or they stay year-round?
They will come back. I've got them in my yard. People often think of certain things as belonging only in a greenhouse. Or, oh, heck, we could never grow such and such a plant here, like a palm tree, for example. I was recently in Seattle, and it kind of picked my interest because there were some very wonderful, beautiful, substantial palm trees. And I thought, heck, if they can grow in Seattle, I'm going to start inquiring, is there a really hardy one that could grow here in Ketchikan? And I did find a couple, so I'm going to buy them, and what the heck?
We'll have to report back how that works for you.
Yes. Okay. One warning I give everybody with ground covers, of course, is the containment issue. If you don't, you can't, well, no matter what plant it is, you can't just stick it in the ground and walk away and ignore it. You know, and that's particularly true with ground covers. You have to have them contained, whether you put them in flower beds or have some kind of wall around them somehow, or just get out periodically with your axe or your shovel and whack away at them, you know, just to keep them contained.
Yeah, because some of them, I've seen many a yard where it is basically now it's covered the driveway or it's covered everything, and it's just,
I know it,
gone wild.
It's the lazy gardener syndrome where you just can't put your plants in the dirt and walk away. They're not sticks, you know. They will do what they're going to do. Anyway. There is a wonderful shade-loving plant here in Ketchikan that I am an avid fan of, and that is the group known as hellebores. These are European natives, and they form a large evergreen clump anywhere from 1 to 2 feet tall to 1 to 2 feet wide. And the most popular of these is the Lenten Rose, or the Helleborus hybridus, or the Helleborus orientalis. And these clumps offer a wonderful array of winter flowers. Mine are blooming right now like crazy. And they come in colors of pink and white and yellow and red and purple. And I have one right now. I think it's a Pippa purple. And I bet it has 50 flowers on it right now. So anyway, to attest to their toughness, Maria, I have a metal roof on my house, and when it snows and it starts to slide off the roof and it doesn't quite have enough momentum to fall all the way to the ground, I get these beautiful big hung snow falls of ice cascading off my roof. And sometimes they're hanging down there 3 feet right over my hellebores that I've got planted along the side of the house. And of course, when they get heavy enough and the weight substantial enough, they come, these ice blocks come crashing down. And the first time this happened many years ago, I went, oh no, my hellebores are ruined. They're going to, you know, die. And a few days later, here they come poking up through that ice, which is just like concrete. Here they come, absolutely unperturbed, totally, you know, yoo-hoo, here I am, your beautiful winter flower. So that sold me on hellebores. And I've got them scattered all over my yard now. Some of the common ones that are sold in the nurseries are Winter Bells, Pink Frost, Ruby Glow, and, of course, the one I mentioned, the Pippa Purple. But there are many, many beautiful varieties that neither of our nurseries sell. And so I'm here also to advocate that gardeners in Ketchikan start requiring our two nurseries. There's there seems like they're both north of town, that the ones I know of, to bees and North Shore nurseries. I'm advocating to gardeners to start to asking those owners of those nurseries to expand our varieties of these common flowers and not just get the same ones all the time. So I hope people will join that crusade and we'll see if we can't get a lot more varieties here in town, which things will grow. You know, we just need to be a little more active as gardeners.
How do you, what you mentioned, certainly with ground covers and other plants as well, you need to thin them out or contain them or do whatever it may be. What about water? Now, granted, we get a lot of rain here. Do you just let it be natural, or do you sometimes water your garden?
Oh, no, yes. I go out and I stick my finger in the dirt, and if it's dry down to my second knuckle, I'll get the hose out and water. And this is particularly important for people who have gardens like I do that have huge big trees in them, because those trees, I was reading an astounding fact some while ago about, yeah, I think it was yellow cedars. Their requirement for water is like 200 gallons a day. And I've got flowers surrounding all my trees, you know, because I've made my beds around the trees and use those as the centerpieces. So, yes, I water a lot in the summertime if it's required, particularly under those areas that, even though it's raining, they don't get wet under there because the tree canopy is so thick. Yep. Like I said earlier, other than irrigation and soil preparation, those two things, shade gardening is one that totally depends on your plant selection. So the other plant that has enjoyed a recent resurgence here in Ketchikan is coral bells, or the technical name, hucheras. And I've noticed that thanks to the incorporation of our native Huchera americana, that's a native Huchera of the West Coast, that breeding programs have come up with a whole array of wonderful colors now to lighten up our shade gardens with wonderful foliage, such as the Huchera chocolate ruffles, the ruby ruffles, the velvet night, the Persian carpet, and there's a great pea green one now called Citronella. A very light green that's almost like a glow green. Hucheras, unfortunately, it's just the way they are. They are short-lived. By short-lived, I mean about every 2 years, you should take your axe to them and chop them in half because they will die out. Again, like we said a few minutes ago, Maria, you can't just put things in the ground and ignore them, and hucheras are one of those. You have to divide them. And if you keep dividing them, heck, you can share them with your neighboring gardeners and keep yours healthy and spread them around your yard and share.
So if you do not break them up and separate them, they just die out?
That's exactly right. Yep. And where would we be without that other woodland great, the bleeding heart? And I think everybody in Ketchikan's got a bleeding heart or two in their yard, if not in their chest. Mm-hmm. And I have found that the red one that grows to be about 3 feet tall is by far the most hale and hearty. I do have some white bleeding hearts in my yard. They take a little more care, a little more nursing, and they bloom wonderful. A close relative of the bleeding heart is the Corydalis. And even though the leaf, the foliage appears to be very similar to the bleeding heart, the flower is entirely different. It's yellow. I think that's the lutea. That's the one I have in my yard. But there is a Corydalis that's blue. I've never seen it, and I keep looking for it. So I'll hopefully find it someday. And They're a wonderful flower, the Corydalis. There are a couple of woodland plants that many grow in Ketchikan. They're the Bergenias. These are the ones that have those huge, big, leathery leaves. And they sort of look like heck in the winter because they get kind of rusty around the edges. They kind of die out. And so some people think, oh, I don't like those flowers. But if you prune them back, every spring they'll come back and they're beautiful. And the trick is to find the right species, of course, for our area. And I've noticed that both the nurseries in Ketchikan, of course, sell the right ones.
And I want to point out to our listeners, we have a little less than 10 minutes available in this show. And if you have questions, if you'd like to give us a call, the numbers are 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
Great. Yeah, call somebody. Is anyone out there listening?
Oh, yes. The phone just started ringing. So.
Okay. I guess the plant that takes the most shade is a Japanese plant called a rhodia. And if I could just mention that before we get this caller on the line, it's the sacred lily in Japan, and each has a different variation. They're often described as the evergreen hosta. And there's lovely ones called Rhodia Fuji no Yuki. They're all Japanese. And I have fallen in love with Japanese plants. There must be something about Japanese whatever that has the same kind of climate as we have here in Ketchikan. Every time I see a Japanese something or other, whether it's a fern or a Rhodia, I buy it because I know it's going to flourish in my shady yard.
You mentioned hostas. Are you a fan of hostas?
Oh, yes, I am.
I see that. They're beautiful plants. You see them all over.
Aren't they?
And they can get quite large.
They do. And the only reason I haven't mentioned them so far is that hostas are such a popular flower in Ketchikan and a shade flower. And I thought, well, I wouldn't bother with it. But I have over 50 hostas in my garden alone. And people will say, oh, I'm not going to get a hosta because the slugs eat them up. Well, yes, we have slugs. You know, quit whining.
A lot of things.
Quit whining and get on with it. You know, we have a slug bait in town, and I want to put a really strong word in to gardeners to use slug bait that doesn't kill dogs. The slug bait that is pet friendly is very, very potent on your plants and will take care of them without killing the neighbor's dog. Or if you've ever seen a dog that has eaten slug bait, it is a very awful thing.
And what's nice about that slug bait, they basically eat it and disappear. I guess they're underground.
Right.
I don't know. You never see their little slug bodies.
That's right. I'm the kind of customer that when I see the commercial stores in Ketchikan that sell those slug baits that kill dogs, I march up to the counter and make a big scene with the clerk about, or talk to the manager about how angry I am that they sell them when there's very good pet products, pet-friendly products. Enough of that.
Okay, we do have a caller. Judith is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Martha, I have a ground cover that I didn't intend to be a ground cover. It's called Kenilworth Ivy.
Uh-huh.
And it's really lovely, and it's very aggressive, which I didn't anticipate. And then I have another ground cover that is, it's got little variegated leaves, and it grows up a little bit, and it has like yellow flowers in the early summer. But I don't even know what it is, I planted it in a little spot, and now it's a lot of spots.
Yeah. Without seeing it, Judith, it could be from the Lamium family. Lamium has a lot of variegation of its leaves, and it spreads like crazy. I know we have a patch of Lamium out that we share with the neighbors that we put in our driveway to keep the garbage trucks off our driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes over. That first one, I didn't hear the first word. What kind of ivy was it?
It's called Kenilworth.
Yes. Is that the one that has the beautiful purple flowers on it?
Yeah.
Oh, that is such a gorgeous ground cover. If you're trying to get rid of some, I would be happy come and dig it up.
I'm happy with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to become a ground cover.
Yes.
I got it for a hanging basket,
uh-huh.
and it... it has made itself very much at home all over.
That is a great ground cover. Thanks, Judith, for reminding me. I first saw that out at Cheryl Hall's house, and I fell in love with it. And being the sharing gardener that she is, she got her shovel and dug a whole bunch of it up for me, and I now have it planted in my garden here and there. I would recommend that when a person gives you a sample of something like that, that you plant it in more than one spot, because there are all these little echo climates in your yard, and some places they'll do really well and other places they won't. But that is thank you for saying that ivy is that's a wonderful ground cover.
And how
I would
do you
recommend
spell the Lamia one?
Lamian, L, how do you spell it?
Yes, I can look it up.
Well, you would ask me that. Lamianium.
Okay.
I'll
go look it up. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any other questions? Okay.
Nope, that
okay.
was it.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks,
and
Judith.
Again, we just have a few minutes left in the program, so if you have questions out there, please call now, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. Martha, are there other plants that you wanted to mention and make people aware of?
Yeah, sure, there are. One of them, of course, and we all kind of stick our nose up at this one, is that goat's beard that grows along the edge of the highway. That is actually a stilbe. And if you have a territorial garden supply book, catalog, or any other common one, they actually sell those in, makes me laugh. But that would be a wonderful plant to go out and dig it up. And see if you can't get that to grow in your yard with your other astilbes, the goat's beard. There's sweet woodruff, which is a good one.
And some of these are here naturally, correct?
Yeah.
They're just wild plants that you could.
I just found how to spell lamium. Lamium. I hope you're still listening. Let's see, all the flowers that end in warts, like lungwort, moneywort, spiderwort, those are all great flowers for shade gardening. There's a beautiful lily called a toad lily. It is gorgeous. That is really love shade. And of course, all those hostas. There are hundreds of varieties of hostas, and I sure recommend them. There's a flower that grows in a really wet spot in my garden under some trees. It's a very, very dense shade called a turtle head. I recommend that one. It blooms very late in the summer, too, and it's got kind of bluish purple flowers on it. That's another reason I like it. I like it so much. Ligularias, those are a wonderful shade flower that can grow really well here in Ketchikan. I have trouble with ligularias because the slugs really like them. The slugs like ligularias more than they like hostas, if such a thing could be possible. And then where would you be without ferns? I can't leave here this morning, Maria, without mentioning ferns, of which I have over 100 different kinds, and I'm going to keep doing that. As you know, I've had tour groups come out to my house, and some small groups come out, neighbors get together and say, let's go out to Martha's and wander around her garden. And that's an open invitation to anybody who wants to do that. And it's real interesting because they don't spend much time in the sunnier locations in my yard. They migrate into the shade. And I'm thinking it's something to do with that peacefulness that a shade garden gives to your soul. I don't want to be too mushy sounding about it, but it really is peaceful and tranquil. And so I have planted numerous ferns. And again, I'm zeroing in on ferns from Japan. And I'm hoping that maybe people will talk to the two owners of the nurseries to get more ferns from Japan, because they thrive here. They really do well. There's cinnamon ferns, there's ostrich ferns, there's a fern called a royal fern that has this lovely purple stem. I mean, I could go on and on about the kinds of ferns there are. So
Okay, and we're actually out of time now, and I think we could go on for a lot longer, but I do thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
And maybe we'll have you back, and certainly look forward to checking out your garden. And I'm trying to think, I probably was there 20 years ago, or so, I don't even remember. It was a long, long, long time ago, so I'm sure it's built up.
All right,
up.
Well, the invitation's out there, Maria. Y'all come. I'm on Kingfisher Road.
Okay, and we have, I'll let one more call through. We really are out of time, but we have a caller on the line. Hang on just a second here. And it is Steve who has a question about ground cover. Good morning.
Good morning. We probably don't have enough time to address my issue, but my issue is I have a very steep, shady area that I've been trying to establish ground cover on, and I've been totally unsuccessful so far. I've put a dozen different plants out there and nothing happened.
Steve, because we are out of time, I'm going to give you my phone number, which is 247-2415, and I can address your issue because there is actual plants that are recommended to grow on steep slopes.
And is it, Steve, that they fall down the hill and just don't establish? It's just gravity is the disadvantage? Or?
I think it's a combination of maybe gravity and soil.
Drainage. And
yeah.
It could be drainage, right. And okay. It could also be the relationship of your slope to where the sun hits. You know, that's a possibility,
yeah, almost
too.
Almost no sun.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you, Martha, just real quick, are there a couple of plants you could mention for steep slopes that come to mind? Or?
You know, strawberries do well on steep slopes. Have you tried strawberries?
Yes.
Okay. So much for that.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have you get in touch with Martha and
do call me, Steve.
And we'll go from there. Thanks for your call, Steve.
Give me a little while to get home and then give me a call at home and I'd even be willing to go out to your place and look at your slope to brainstorm.
So it was 247-2415?
247-2415.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you so much. And again, thank you so much, Martha Jacobson, for being here and helping us out.